Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Today is our first book review of 2016, and I'm joined in the studio by Charmaine Lovegrove, co-founder of page-to-screen consultancy Dialogue Scouting. Charmaine's arrived armed with a trio of books to review for us today, and these are Human Acts by South Korean author Han Kang, In a Land of Paper Gods, the debut novel by Rebecca McKenzie, and The Life and Death of Sophie Stark, Anna North's new novel about the price you have to pay to make great art. That's all ahead here on the Monocle Arts Review. Stick around. Welcome to the show, Charmaine.
Thank you for having me. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Is 2016 treating you well so far?
I'm really enjoying being a vegetarian this year.
Okay, that was slightly unconvincing. Perhaps we'll come back to that. Let's begin our literary trawl with Han Kang's novel Human Acts, which has just been translated by Deborah Smith for an English-speaking audience from its original Korean. What's the story here with this one, first of all?
So, you know, it's 2016, so let's kind of keep it real life elements and kind of look into world politics. And so we start with Human Acts, which describes the event of Jangju uprising in South Korea in 1980. So there was a dictator, this is real life events. Labourers were mistreated by this dictatorship. And at the time, lots of students rallied around for the cause of the labourers, and it was just a huge massacre that I don't really think that we've touched upon in the UK, and it's some kind of thing that we don't really learn about in history, which is why this kind of book is really important. So the book opens where we meet a young 15-year-old boy called Dong Ho, who's trying to find his best friend amongst the bodies, and then he ends up working as part of the civilian militia, trying to tag and understand where the dead have come from, and try and attach them to their relatives, and whilst trying to look for his best friend. And you know, we just understand how harrowing this massacre was for the people. And then the book travels sort of 35 years and the aftermath, and sort of looks at the relationship between life and death, and has a cacophony of voices which allow us to really have a deep understanding of how such a tragic occurrence really shakes the foundation of a country and its people.
Now, obviously, the book is called Human Acts, and it sounds, I don't know, fairly challenging from your description, and I gather it doesn't really shy away from capturing the harrowing nature of some of these horrors. Is there then an irony to calling it Human Acts? Is it a book that doesn't have much positive to say about humanity or positive stories, or is there something more, I don't know, life-affirming in there to cling on to?
No, I definitely think that, you know, it's kind of weighs in around 300 pages, so it's not a big book. It's really telling us and really trying to explain to us that these human acts are caused by humans, and for us to kind of really think about ourselves in relation to the world and the fact that this could happen to anyone at any time. And I don't think that you know, fiction needs to be uplifting, but I definitely think that it has to be thought-provoking, and sometimes that means it's harrowing, which this is. But it doesn't leave a nasty taste in your mouth. It just, I really felt very reflective upon the world in which we live in, and the types of things that are happening in the world at the moment. And this book won the Penn English Award. So, you know, it's already within a kind of canon of voices that we need to hear from other places that we haven't heard from before.
I was going to ask you about that, because it's interesting. It's won prizes. We talked about it being the second novel, I think, from Han Kang to be translated into English. Will it play to an audience who, as you explained at the beginning, aren't necessarily familiar with some of these themes, with the history, with the events? Will it travel, I guess, is the question.
I really hope so. I mean, I think, you know, the one thing that we're learning with what's happening in the world at the moment is that, you know, when we look at Syria, is that the human element of and being sort of out of control as an individual and how governments play such a huge part in our everyday lives in a way that we don't necessarily see. And I think that I hope that this book, having won this such an award and being supported by a lot of international literary kind of activists, as it were, that it will get into the hands of lots of different types of people. And obviously, with Granta and Portobello behind it as well, I think that, you know, that's a really, really, it's a really, really strong contender to have come out of South Korea. And I really hope that lots of people get to really delve into a history that we don't ever get to see.
Mm. Just briefly on Han Kang, the first novel translated into English was a shorter book, quite quirky. Is this a flourishing career that we're watching, likely to be full of surprises next? Are you sort of excited about what the future might
be? Yeah, I have no idea where she's going to go next. And as you said, the first book, The Vegetarian, was entirely different. And, you know, really, I'm hoping that for this generation, she'll be the next kind of Banana Yoshimoto, you know, somebody that deals with the sublime and bizarre of Japanese culture, but then also really looked upon like the how stark and how foreboding the culture is as well. And Banana Yoshimoto did that with many different books, and I'm hoping that Han Kang can do this for Korean writing as well.
Indeed. We'll watch with interest. Human Acts by Han Kang has just been published in English by, as Charmaine mentioned, Portobello Books. Next up, we have the forthcoming release of In a Land of Paper Gods by Rebecca McKenzie. This is the writer's first novel, which will be released at the end of this month. Charmaine, I guess before we talk about the book, introduce us to the author, first of all.
So Rebecca McKenzie, she was brought up by missionaries in sort of four or five different countries around sort of Southeast Asia. And she's also a performance artist and a dancer, and sounds like an incredible person on her own. And then she has this really great talent of being able to write, which we've all just discovered from reading her book right now.
Well, it's interesting, just looking at some of the writing about the book and the reviews and some of the influences of Rebecca McKenzie, and it's the likes of Emily Dickinson, Virginia Woolf, Graham Greene, Arundhati Roy. Quite an eclectic mix. What does that mean? What do we see on the page as a result of those myriad influences?
Well, in capital letters, I have imagination. You know, she's so... Well, I think what Rebecca's really great at doing is allowing us into what you can imagine of being like her own secret world. She was raised by missionaries, as said, in Southeast Asia. And it's almost like she's just unlocked us into this world that we didn't even know existed. So we find ourselves in the Yangtze province in China in 1941 with 10-year-old Henrietta Robinson, and who's also known as Etta, who one day she has a sort of divine calling on the top of a mountain where her boarding school is, and becomes Samantha and enlists all of her other friends within her boarding school room, her dormitory. They all become prophecesses, and it's just an enchanting, magical realism romp through China with this backdrop of the Second World War, and whilst China is at war with Japan. And so essentially you kind of realise as you're going through the book that, you know, you can feel like Marilyn Robinson. You know, we don't really have that many writers that really look at God, look at religion in the way that Rebecca has done in this tome, which is really, really fascinating, and really bringing that idea of religion to a different generation, a different readership. And, you know, what you really understand is that these young women growing up with this backdrop of faith, but also of war, and essentially their playground are the hills and mountains within China, in this northern province, and they're really trying to escape the horror of war. Mm. But completely different to Human Acts is that, you know, then they're not really faced with the war on a day-to-day basis, but you can tell at some point that they realise that it's there and it really is affecting their life in a way that you hadn't necessarily realised, which is what makes the book really rich, I think.
It's interesting, and it's a bit of a cliche, but I'm going to ask it nevertheless. Often when you read books that document a story that traverses a number of countries, and then you know from the biography of the author that they themselves have had something of an itinerant existence, to ask, are there sort of autobiographical elements? Are there any in this book? Does it matter if there are or aren't?
I just think that it's such a kind of unique world that she's opened us up to, that I'm almost just grateful for her that she has experienced that, so I kind of believe it a bit more. But I'm not really thinking that Etta or Henrietta or Samantha as one character is her. I'm just thinking this is why it's so wonderful that in a world where we can have so many different experiences, and then those people can put it on the page, and that's what we really need writers for, is to go off into the world, have these experiences, come back and enlighten us.
In the quest for enlightenment. That could be the subheading for the Monocle Arts Review. In A Land of Paper Gods by Rebecca McKenzie is published on January the 28th by Tinder Press. Let's end, Charmaine, shall we, with a look at what it means to be an unapologetic artist. The Life and Death of Sophie Stark by Anna North explores the lengths it takes for a filmmaker to create great work. First up, Charmaine, I'm always slightly sceptical now, because almost every other novel that is published is called the adjective noun of proper name, in my cynical opinion. Should I let the fact that that's close in terms of Anna North's title put me off this book?
No, I think you need to get like a broader reading list, Tom. I think that's the problem, that you're just drawn to these types of books. But this one's really special, and the reason that it's really special because it is a story of a young woman who's struggling with life behind the lens, but it's also told from the perspective of six different voices, which is not, so you don't really hear her voice at all. You don't hear Sophie Stark. You hear her family and friends, so her brother, her ex-lover, her husband. There's an actress that she had an affair with, that you hear their voices describing Sophie. And as you go through the book and understand her world and her life and the things that she was disgruntled with and confused by and tussling with in everyday life and her art, then you kind of understand her less as it goes on, as opposed to understanding her more. But yet she's so well drawn, as are so all the characters that are describing her, and I've never read anything quite like it. And so, it might seem slightly cliche, but honestly, it was a really revealing look at how we're living today and how to be collaborative and an artist and to strive towards your artistic goals.
It's interesting. People often talk, when we look, I don't know, even to Hollywood, that Hollywood loves nothing more than a film about filmmaking. Mm. And we talk about writers writing about writing, whether it's writer's block or the creative challenges. It seems that this is a book which explores that creative journey, but perhaps in a more creative way than some previous attempts.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the fact, I like the kind of gossipy style of it. Everybody talks about everybody else all the time, but you never really hear that. You never hear what other people have to say about you. You only know what you've said about other people. And I think to read a book that is from that perspective, which again, gives us another layer, there's a layer between us and Sophie, and she feels apparently that there is a layer between her and the world. And I think that's a really, really clever device for Anna North to have used. And I think in the end, you've got this novel that's really questioning where we live, how we live, and our inability to communicate with each other face to face. And so, by asking that question, then Anna North has also not allowed us to kind of communicate directly with Sophie Stark. And, I think that kind of is mind-blowing.
Does the book take us any closer to understanding what it is then to create great art? Or is its agenda something slightly different from that?
I don't think, I think that it's more about this particular woman's struggle and a sort of, you know, portrait of an artist as a young woman. That's been said by a review, and I can definitely see that. It's her struggle with her art, but those, that struggle of a young woman in living today and trying to be a great artist and understanding what that means and what art is and your own relationship to it, both physically and mentally, you know, that's really the kind of the question. And that's really, and you know, it can't ever really be answered, and so as Sophie's life, you know, it's a life and death, so we know that she dies. It's not a spoiler. But you know, we can't, she never really gets to live that out, although she does become quite famous, and then it's sort of interesting the way that her life takes its turns, and how the people that relate to her, how they continue to relate to her, which I think, you know, as we're all growing and we're all developing in our careers, I think that's also a really big question. How do you start relating? How do you continue to relate to people that are close to you?
Fascinating. The book is The Life and Death of Sophie Stark by Anna North. It's out now, published by Weidenfeld and Nicholson. That brings us to the end of this week's show. How time flies.
It just went so quickly.
Many thanks to my guest, Charmaine Lovegrove. Charmaine, thanks for being with us as ever.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Thanks too to our producer, Holly Fisher. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow for our first film review of the year. Karen Krasanovich will be in the guest's chair. But for now, goodbye from me. Thanks very much for listening.